you have your Bible with you here this morning, if you can take it and turn to the book of Esther, chapter 7, we're going to continue our study here this morning in the book of Esther. Growing up, Charlie Brown was one of my favorite cartoons to watch. He was, Peanuts was one of my favorite comic strips to read. I loved Peanuts. Charlie Brown, in one of those episodes, he and one of his friends, Linus, were having a discussion about the problems of life as he walked down the road. And after much discussion, Linus gives his problem-solving techniques, and you can see that up there on the screen. Linus says, "I don't like to face problems head-on. I think the best way to solve problems is to avoid them. This is a distinct philosophy of mine. No problem is so big or so complicated that it can't be run away from." As we're looking this morning at bringing darkness into light, we need to remember the big problem that we're facing here in Esther, and Esther's big problem. She and her people, the Jews, were threatened with annihilation. And as the queen, she was the only one who was in a position to do anything about it. Twice now, she has had the opportunity to stand before the king. The king has said to her, "I will give you anything that you want, even to have the kingdom." And twice, she has yet to tell the king exactly what she wanted. We talked last week a little bit about the importance of the right moment, waiting for the right time. And I think one of the reasons was that she was waiting for the right time. A third opportunity for her is now coming up. She's a third time standing before the king, and a third time he's going to ask the same thing. And now she has to make a decision. And everything in her, inside of her, could have said, "Be like Linus. Run away from the problem. Keep my mouth shut. Don't get involved." But there was another voice. Another voice that Esther had to listen to, a voice that was telling her that this was the time for her to speak up. This was a time that was a matter, the consequences were now, and we had to do that. Maybe we can identify with Linus. Maybe we are conflict avoiders. You've been in a situation where you felt like you needed to say something, but you found that you just couldn't. You were struggling with whether or not that you should. You saw something going on, and you suspected something wasn't right, but is it really my place to say something? What would be the consequences be if I said something and I was wrong about that? And even worse, what if I said something and it was correct? And what would the consequences of that be? If you have a lost friend, somebody who doesn't know Jesus, and you know that they don't know Jesus, and you want to share with them, but maybe it's not the right time to do that. And what if they reject the gospel? What if they reject me? So you keep putting it off, and you keep putting it off, and you're telling yourself there's going to be a better time. But what if the perfect moment never comes? See, last week we talked about one person, one moment, and one act of obedience. This morning we're going to conclude our study on the book of Esther, and we're going to look at Esther's moment of truth, a moment where she had to come, and she had to face it, and she had to deal with the outcome as it came. How did Esther bring darkness into light? Jesus tells us that he is the light. And Jesus tells us that we are to let our light shine. We're to let him shine. And that we have the opportunity to be light in a dark world. So how do we do that? Well, the first thing we see is the reward for obedience in Esther. We talk a lot about obedience in church circles. We say it's obedience this and obey that. And why do we talk about obedience? We talk about obedience because it's important. Taking that first step can be scary. For Esther, the time had come, and it was time for her to speak. Let's read together in Esther chapter 7, verses 1 through 4. "Now the king and Haman came to drink wine with Esther, the queen. And the king said to Esther on the second day also, as they drank their wine at the banquet, 'What is your petition, Queen Esther? It shall be granted you. And what is your request? Even a half the kingdom, it shall be done.' Then Esther replied, 'If I have found favor in your sight, O king, and if it pleases the king, let my life be given as my petition, and my people as my request. For we have been sold by my people to be destroyed, to be killed, and to be annihilated. Now if we had only been sold as slaves, men and women, I would have remained silent, for the trouble would not be commensurate with the annoyance of the king.'" So picture Esther here. Her heart is probably in her throat. She knows that what she's about to say, the consequences of her actions here. Now, we're beyond the point where coming before the king would bring her death. We talked about that before, that just coming before the king could bring her death. But now she's at another point. She's past that. But if she comes before the king and if she shares her request, She realized that she could be condemned to die because to this point, the king does not know that she's a Jew. He doesn't know her nationality, and that has not been revealed. And so as she shares the consequences, as she shares this, then she could be facing death if the king responds in a certain way. But she also knows that if she does not speak, the other end of the consequences is that her people could be rescued if the king responds the right way. And so the choice had to be made to expose darkness and bring light. Sometimes that requires tough choices on our part. So she goes to the king and she lets it know what nationality that she belongs to. But why does she do that? The reason that she does that, it wasn't a selfish reason. Esther wasn't just looking out for herself. Esther wasn't just looking out for some strangers, but she was caring about the rescue of her people. She let the king know how desperate this situation was. And she tells the king, she says, look, I wasn't going to bother you unless it was really important. I wouldn't come before you. If I was just going to be a slave, I would let it go. Not to me, just being a slave was a big deal. All right, I think I would have even said to the king, if I was going to be a slave, hey, you should deal with this. But to her, she says, if it's just being a slave, no big deal. But this is about my people being annihilated. I can handle being a slave, but I don't want my people to be killed. The consequences of making a decision, the consequences of standing up, you know, the consequences of speaking up for Jesus can be high for us. If we share about Jesus and we tell people that we're believers and we share what we believe, we can be labeled as a religious weirdo. We can be rejected by friends and people may think that we're crazy. And we may have these reasons, all these reasons why we can't. But if you thought about the reason why you should, see, because of the consequences of us speaking up have other actions as well. What if there's someone who is drowning in sin and they're living in low hope and their life has no meaning and we have the opportunity to share a hope that is real for them? So we worry about the consequences for us. How does it impact me? But we think about the consequences for others. How does it impact them if we do not speak, if we do not share what God would have us do? Staying silent may be easier and safer for us, but speaking may be necessary for the people that we care about and the people that we love. So when the king discovers the what, he wants to know who. In verses 5 and 6, the king asks Esther, he says, who is he and where is he who had presumed to do thus? Esther said, a foe and an enemy is this wicked Haman. Then Haman became terrified before the king and queen. Esther's pretty wise here. If she's looking at this and she says it's Haman, notice who she didn't accuse. She didn't accuse the king. King Xerxes here, King Ahasuerus, he was actually the one who issued the decree. It was done at Haman's request, but he was the one that did it. It was his order. He did it in agreement with Haman to get rid of the Jews. So Esther's quarrel, she could have easily said, you know, hey, it was you, probably not a real smart thing to do, but it was you and Haman. Or she could have said, you did this with Haman, or she could have, you know, Haman used you, and she could have said these things, but she was very careful how she worded that, because her fight was not with the king. Her fight was with the problem. See, he was not the one who hated the Jews. He was not the one who did this. He was not the enemy. He was one who had been maybe manipulated by someone else. And we need to understand the importance of actually facing the problem. See, because sometimes the person that we're having a disagreement with, the one who has created the problem, who's forcing us to speak, sometimes that's not really the enemy. Sometimes the enemy really isn't our spouse or our child or our coworker or our neighbor. See, the enemy is the problem. And we have to be able to face the problem. And when we understand the problem and are willing to face the problem, maybe that will alleviate some of the fear that we have and help us to attack the problem and deal with the problem instead of attacking people. Esther could have attacked a lot of people during this time. She could have pointed some fingers at different people, but she didn't. See, constantly attacking a person makes the problem go bigger and bigger. And you can see this with Esther. She attacks the king, how much bigger the problem would get and how much more difficult the problem would get. But she goes right to the problem. See, you can deal with the problem. You can't always deal with things when you're attacking people. And Esther comes here and she just reveals everything. She lays it on the table. She doesn't hear. She just says, this is what's going on. And now all she could do now is sit back and she could see what the reaction of the king was going to be. Esther had no idea how the king was going to react to this information. You know, he could easily fly off the handle, lose his temper. That's been kind of the way that he operated, right? That's how she became queen in the first place, was because something happened and he lost his temper and Vashti was gone and Esther became queen. So she had no idea. She had just accused the king's most trusted servant. And I think the king probably understood that by association, he was involved in this too. And he could have done this. He was the one that signed off on the plan. So what would his reaction be, and what would he do with this information? So we see a couple of reactions here. We see Haman's reaction first in verse 6. Imagine Haman. Just think for a moment. We've talked about the personality of him. He's been invited to a banquet with the king and the queen, and he's talked about how important he is, and he gets invited to a second banquet. And so he's thinking pretty great about himself. Here I am. I'm the second in charge. I'm living life. The queen loves me so much that she only invited me to come to this banquet. He's kicking back. He's eating, drinking, and then he hears this news. If he's got some food in his mouth, I bet he began to choke on it. If he's drinking some of that wine, I bet he spewed it out pretty quickly as he hears this news. And then the king's reaction. In verse 7a, it says the king, he was shocked. It says the king arose in his anger from drinking wine, and he went into the palace garden. He had a different reaction. The king was probably shocked. He was probably maybe a little outraged as a revelation. Someone was threatening his queen. But he didn't act immediately. He didn't come to the defense of his wife. He didn't come to the defense of his trusted servant Haman. Instead, it says he got up and he walked out into the garden. We need to look and understand the consequences of sin for us to understand the importance of those consequences. Why did the king walk out of the room? Some have suggested that it was to gain control of his temper. It's probably not right because nowhere we have seen the king ever do that before. Maybe he was there trying to think things through, and he went to the garden to contemplate this information that he had heard, to contemplate the possible death of his wife. So many reasons that he could have gone, but I think he went there really to kind of assimilate the information. When you get this kind of shocking information, sometimes the best thing isn't to react right away. Sometimes the best thing to do is to stop and to think. So he walks out and he takes the time to think through. He has a decision here, you see, because he has Esther, his queen, on one side, and he has Haman, his friend, on the other side. Who is he going to believe? Who is he going to trust? What decision was he going to make with this information? Who should he listen to? Tough decisions. And we're faced with so many tough decisions. He had to choose between a wife and a friend, a person. We make these decisions all the time, and far too often we look at the wrong motivation when we look at making decisions. Far too often we think about the consequences of sin. And the consequences of sin could have such different ramifications if we actually stopped and thought things through before we actually get to that point. Have you ever done that? You ever gotten to a point where you're stuck with something and you said, man, I wish I'd have thought this through a whole lot earlier, and I'd have made a different decision earlier to get me to where I am right now? You know, the guilty always act guilty. If you look at the story here and you see Haman's reaction to all this, the king hadn't even said anything yet. The king got up and walked away, and the king hadn't done anything. And Haman immediately begins to plead for his life. See, far too often we're more concerned with the consequences of our sin than we are with really being sorry for our sin. I don't think Haman was sorry at all. I don't think Haman cared a little bit about what he did, but he saw what the consequences were. In his mind, he was already convicted. In his mind, he thought he knew what the king was going to do. And in his mind, he immediately begins to try to find something to escape the consequences of his sin. And so he's begging Esther to please to spare him. And how many times do we see Christians, non-Christians, come before God, not willing to face our sin, not willing to turn away from our sin, but just begging God to take away the consequences of our sin? We're not repentant. We don't want to change. We don't really care. We just don't want to deal with those consequences. We don't really want the forgiveness. We just don't want the results. So notice what the result is for Haman here. In verses 9 and 10, it says, "Then Harbona, one of the eunuchs who were before the king, said, Behold, indeed, the gallows standing in Haman's house, 50 cubits high, which Haman made for Mordecai, who spoke good on behalf of the king, and the king said, Hang him on it. So they hang Haman on the gallows, which he had prepared for Mordecai, and the king's anger subsided." Harbona is an interesting character. Notice here, he was really quick to come with some information to get Haman out of the picture here, right? He was really good at disposing Haman. He was a guy who was ready to jump on. You know that guy. You know the person, right? As soon as you do something, you have that person right there who's ready to point out your sin. The person that's ready to say, okay, you mess this up. The guy that's ready. This is a Harbona here. He's ready to expose the sin. You look at the situation here and what's going on, and you see Haman had made some enemies, right? He's a man who demanded respect. He didn't earn respect. And those kind of people usually kind of form some enemies. They have people who don't like them. Harbona may not have really liked Haman for some reason. He may have really liked Esther. Esther was a very respected queen, and it says in Esther's reading through that she was deeply loved. Maybe he acted because of his great love for Esther. Maybe he was just letting the king know, hey, if this all shakes out, I just want you to know I'm on your side. All right, I want to make sure that if this goes down, that I'm not on Haman's side, I'm on your side. So I'm very quickly going to choose sides here, and I'm going to get involved. So whatever the reason here, he knew where the gallows were. He knew that Haman had built these gallows to hang Mordecai on, and he quickly points out to King, hey, they were intended for him, and just so you know, that's where they are. So what Haman intended for evil for the Jews became a means of his own execution. See, sin has consequences. And we have to pay the consequences for sin, but we also understand there are consequences for serving the Lord, for serving Jesus, for living for Christ. If you notice through the story, much of the story, we see people being in the right place at the right time. You know, Mordecai was in the right place to overhear the plot against the king's life in chapter 2. Haman was in the right place at the right time to suggest there was a way of honoring Mordecai and to carry out the honoring of that in chapter 6. Esther, the queen, was in the right place at the right time to be queen when all this happened and the threat of the annihilation of the Jews happened. The right place at the right time, but it's more than that. This wasn't just a coincidence of people being in the right place at the right time. This was people being motivated to do what was right and understanding that motivation. Esther was motivated, and we need to understand what motivates us. Let's read chapter 8, verses 1 through 6, and look what motivated Esther. It says, on that day, King Ahasuerus gave the house of Haman, the enemy of the Jews, to Queen Esther. And Mordecai came before the king, for Esther had disclosed what he was to her. And the king took off his signet ring, which he had taken away from Haman, and gave it to Mordecai. And Esther set Mordecai over the house of Haman. Then Esther spoke again to the king, fell at his feet, wept, and implored him to avert the evil scheme of Haman, the Agagite, and his plot, which he had devised against the Jews. The king extended the golden scepter to Esther, so Esther arose and stood before the king. Then she said, if it pleases the king, and if I have found favor before him, and this matter seems proper to the king, and I am pleasing in his sight, let it be written to revoke the letters devised by Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, which is wrote to destroy the Jews who are in the king's provinces. For how can I endure to see the calamity which will befall my people, and how can I endure to see the destruction of my kindred? Motivation. What is important to us? What's important to us living for Christ? See, King Xerxes here, King Ahasuerus, he didn't care about the Jews. He cared nothing about them. He paid no attention to them. He only cared about them when he noticed that somebody that he cared about them. He was interested in the Jews only when he found out that Esther was interested in the Jews. He didn't care what happened to the people until someone else cared about those people. You know, people are motivated by different things, and we need to understand what motivates us. I heard a story once about a man by the name of Lou Little, and he was a football coach at Columbia University, and he had a guy on his football team who didn't play very well. He wasn't a good football player, but he kept him on the team because he was a guy who kept the morale of the team high. He was a good spirit guy. He was a good guy to have around the team. He was just a good guy, so the coach kept him around, and he noticed that this player, after every game, him and this young man's dad would walk around the stadium and walk around campus, and the boy would just kind of lead his dad around. And so eventually, this boy's dad, he passes away unexpectedly. And the young man goes to the coach and says, hey, can I just play one game? Can I just play? I want to play for my dad. And so the coach literally puts him in and lets him play, and he says, I'll let him start. He can play a few plays, and then I'll pull him back out, and I'll put my starters in, and we're good to go. And this young man plays, and he plays very well, and he plays inspired football, and so the coach keeps him in. He plays almost the entire game, and he plays the best football he's ever played. And after the game, Coach Little, he pulls this young man aside, and he says, what got into you out there? What happened today? And the boy said, do you remember my father and how I used to walk around the stadium and around campus after games with my dad? Well, my dad didn't want people to know, but he was totally blind and he couldn't see. And this afternoon was the first time that my dad ever got to watch me play football. And so he played inspired football because he had motivation, and his actions changed dramatically because he was motivated. And notice his motivation. It wasn't about him. His motivation was outwardly focused, and we need to be outwardly focused in our motivation. When we face the decision of whether we should speak up or whether we should say something, we need to check our motivation. Why are we doing what we're doing? Are we doing it to make ourselves look good? Are we doing it so that we can hurt somebody else, make somebody else look bad? Are we doing it because we have this secret that we just can't keep and we got to make sure everybody else knows what this secret is? Are we doing it to protect ourselves? Are we doing it for the greater benefit of others? See, whether or not we choose to speak up or whether or not we choose to remain quiet, we need to understand what our choices are and what motivates us to make these choices. See, when we teach Sunday school classes, do we care about the people that we're teaching? Do we care about the students in our class? Church, do we care about the people outside these walls? If we're honest, the answer might be yes, and the answer might be no. We may not really care. But let me ask you a question. Do you care about God? And if I asked you that, most of you would say yes. Well, see, here's the deal. God cares. God cares about the people outside these walls. God cares about each individual. And we, our motivation needs to be the motivation that God cares. You see, because other motivations can go away. See, if we're motivated by serving because someone asked you to serve, then what happens when serving gets hard? If you're motivated to do something because the pastor makes you feel guilty about doing something and you say yes just because you're guilty, where does that motivation end? It'll go away. If you're motivated because you get some kind of recognition for what you do, that will go away as well. If you're motivated because somebody will look at you and say, look how that person's serving, that's great, but that's going to go away. Look, honestly, if we're motivated to share the gospel only because we think people need to hear the gospel, then that motivation is also going to, something could go away, because what happens when people begin to reject the gospel? And what happens when people begin to reject us? And we say, I can't do that anymore because I can't deal with the rejection. All those things, all those motives will lead us to falling away. But what doesn't? We love God. We're motivated by our love for Him. We're motivated by our love for Jesus. And that's why we do it. That's why we do it. And we also struggle with this idea of looking for a perfect moment to do something. If I just find the perfect moment. Look, the perfect moment never happens. The perfect moment doesn't come. It just doesn't show up and you say, okay, now's the right time to do something. Look at the story here as we've been talking through it. The perfect moment for Esther came. But why did it come? Because Esther prepared herself spiritually. Esther spent time fasting and praying. Esther actually did something. She prepared a banquet and she prepared a second banquet. There were actions. She just didn't pray and say, okay, God, now that I prayed, you figure it out for me. She prayed and then she did something and she worked. And she approached the object of request, and she went to the king. Notice in the whole story, the king never came to her. Not one time did the king come to Esther and say, what do you want? Each of those times, Esther had to go to the king, and then the king responded to her. It requires us to go, and it requires us to do something. Esther had to refuse to listen to her fears, and we have to refuse to listen to our fears and speak in spite of them. And she spoke these things because she knew there was something that was right, and there was something that was true. And we need to respond to truth. Truth is an interesting thing. There was a Stanford Research Institute, and they were studying the differences in vocational perceptions. And so they devised this short but succinct test. And so they ran this test, and the first to be tested was an engineer. And they went to the engineer, and they said, what does 2 plus 2 make? And the engineer simply said, in absolute terms, 4. And so they made their notes on that, and then they went on, and they brought in an architect, and they said to the architect, asked him the same question. And he said, well, there are several possibilities. 2 and 2 make 4, but so does 1 and 3, and 2.5 and 1.5 also make 4. So it's really a matter of choosing the right option. And so they made their notations on that, and they kind of went forward on that. And then they brought in an attorney. And they brought the attorney, and they asked the attorney the same question, and the attorney looked around, and he said, can we close the door for some privacy? And so they close the door, the attorney gets really close, and he says, well, tell me, what do you want the answer to be? Darkness to light is based on truth. Trusting God for the results, and once we present the truth, we trust that God is going to do what God does. God's going to provide evidence that confirms what we know that is true. See, we serve a God who can change unchangeable people. We serve a God who can change unchangeable circumstances. At the beginning, when Esther hears this plot, she says, there's nothing I can do. If I die, I die, but there's not really anything I do. I guess I'll just go out there. But she didn't change anything. She serves a God who changed, a God who can bring darkness to light, and a God who chooses us to do that. So I heard it said one time that a bar of soap wrapped up in its package and sitting on its shelf cleans nothing. It just sits there. A believer sitting in a pew, uninvolved in life, not willing to get dirty, not willing to invest in people, has as much opportunity to prevent darkness as that bar of soap has to clean something. If we're not willing to be involved, if we're not willing to answer the question, who's going to go, if we're not willing to do those things, we make no difference. And so that's where we are today. We've studied through the book of Esther, and we've looked through the book. We've talked about the things of Esther did. We looked at the whole idea that it's not about you. The whole story of Esther is about God. And we looked at the idea that there's a right moment and a right person, and you choose the right time and act of obedience and what God does, and darkness to light. And the question for us is, how do we respond to what we've read in the book of Esther? You know, hopefully for some of us, this wasn't a book we just went through in a few weeks, but you spent time reading it and looking at it. And what has that said to you? And what is your response? What does God have for you this morning? We have a time of invitation, a time of response. And I may not know what God's doing in your heart, but you do. I can't hear God speak to you, but you can. And if God is speaking to you about taking a step, about doing something, about serving Him in some way, if God is speaking to you about dealing with some sin in your life, about making some changes, whatever it is, listen to the voice of God. You can come pray with me, and I'll pray with you. We can work through some things. You can pray with somebody near you. You can just sit and be there by yourself, pray at the altar, however you want to respond. Whatever God may be saying to you, even if it has nothing to do with anything we're talking about, if God is leading you to respond, do that this morning as we stand together and as we sing.